Question comes from the line of Jamie Ruby. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much for talking to us today. I'm not sure why the Star One hadn't worked before, but it's great to talk to you again.
No problem.
So last time when I talked to you, you talked about kind of the decision to put the reveal early on of what's going on. But because of that, there's still so much going on in the following episodes after that. Can you talk about kind of keeping that pace going? And was it did it make it easier having like only 10 episodes as opposed to a longer run?
Yeah, very much so. I don't know if when we spoke earlier, I spoke about the original intent, at least when I was talking to Fox initially, was to do 12 or 13. And then we started to outline it, and it did have a kind of a little vamp feeling in there. Like there was a couple episodes that I just couldn't get enough teeth in it that it felt like I was vamping for the more tentpole episodes. And we talked to Fox, and Fox felt the same way. And they said, "Well, what do you think about doing 10?" And I said, "You know, that's probably what this story wants to be. At least the one that I'd outlined from you know Ethan waking up in the forest to the last episode. It felt I could see it very clearly as 10." And how the architecture works with the fifth episode being letting everyone in on at least on the big picture of what's happening. And for me, episode 5 and 6 are kind of the answers episodes. And then for me, post that is the, oh my God, how are we going to deal with what we know now? And there's a specific thing I wanted to aim at in my head. I kind of had it in my head that I wanted to get to this big moment that is basically in 9 and 10, and I wanted to aim there. For me, that was when I was even pitching it to Fox as what the season looked like. I was like, you know, I wanted to get to this, and I'm avoiding saying what it is because I just don't want to ruin it for you guys. But I, you know, the format was critical. I think that's what's so beautiful about doing television right now is you can fit the form to the subject. And not the other way around, which is a great benefit to storytellers.
Right. And then as a follow-up, do you have a favorite kind of surprise moment or reveal? A lot, and there's a couple big, but is there one?
Yeah, let's see. What am I saying? Well, you know, I did perversely enjoy when Juliet got it. But, although I loved her too, I loved her as an actress. It was so sad because we were having such a great time, and I was bumming about doing that to her. But the more that you love her, the better it is. So that was probably the most perverse of them. But there's one that to come that is the thing I'm referring to you that I, you know, for me is what the piece has been moving to, and that happens in end of 8 into 9 in that area.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Question to the line of Jasper Meddock. Please go ahead.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hi. It's kind of one of the ones that
we could just explore, you know, different aspects of it. together, but I know Blake has been super supportive about everything. So it does. There was some invention as we went, but I was hugely aiming at this one kind of idea that happens in episode 9-ish that was important to me.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Jensen.
Your next question comes from the line of Suzanne Lano. Please go ahead.
Hi, nice to talk to you again.
Hey, Suzanne.
I've really been enjoying the episodes, and I wanted to know if you have been keeping track at all of what people said on the internet and whether the results have been what you'd hoped for in terms of both fan response, critic response, and ratings.
I don't normally, but I don't normally check all that, but my office has been all over it and so excited. And from what I understand, everything has exceeded my expectations. The audience reaction, there's such an intense attachment to the show from those that are watching it. And I hope those that are going to start watching it now after all this, because luckily for us, we keep growing. And as I understand it, that's a very rare thing in these days in television. So I'm very proud of that, that the people that have watched it have recommended it so strongly that others are adding on each week. Our last episode was our strongest, and I assume last night was even stronger, and it'll keep on growing. And that's a really great feeling. I feel like critically I couldn't have asked for any more, and audience reaction feels, pinned in such a positive, supportive way. So beyond my expectations. I just, it's my first time doing television, and to be embraced so generously, it just, couldn't have worked out any better. And I, for me, to some extent, we were, the way we structured even the airing of the episode so that there was a break right here after episode 5 was with the hope that at this point, and we didn't know whether we would have a fan base that would talk and spend time and try to get and tell everybody, and they, this was kind of the strategic, intent was to give it a little break after this as we get to the last 5 to get everybody to get caught up, because, that's the beauty of doing 10 episodes. For me, I'll tell you, I'm a lazy viewer, so, you need to tell me 20 times that Game of Thrones is great before I watch it. It's, literally like that, and then I watch it, or, Breaking Bad, or, then I watch it, because, I'm like, I'm not going to watch it unless I know it's great, and I'm hoping, the fans that have been growing, that they can tell a lot of people, and, we have this break here, which is, everybody can watch it on, I guess, Fox Now, and Fox On Demand, and the way people consume is so different now, and we were kind of counting on it, that the nature of the show is one that's addictive and one that rewards you every week, and is one that you can grab onto and join on quickly, and watch 5 episodes, and it's like, for example, you never saw an episode and you watched all 5 now over this next week. We're imagining there's a huge amount of audience that is going to do that and then watch the second half with us.
And I was wondering if you guys say TV has changed what they mean when they say things like miniseries, limited run, et cetera. If continues to be successful, will there be a second season?
It's all very pliable and fluid, and I think what's so great about this format, I don't know what event series and all that stuff is, it feels so complete, and it was, it was wonderful. We have the particular advantage, in our case, because of Blake Crouch and his books, that he kept writing, and he kept thinking of stories, and we also have the fact that the world that he created is so rich and fertile that it wants more stories. Whether we ever decide to or not is a separate thing. Whether Fox asks me and we talk about it and all that stuff, I don't know. I mean, I'm open to it. It's just I'm so happy that the format in and of itself seems to be working the way it was intended, to the 10 episodes. and I can't speak for other limited series and all that stuff, but it's a kind of a beautiful thing that you can aim with intensity at a storytelling style that I think imbues it with some integrity, you know, and if that integrity then merits another story, that's a wonderful thing.
All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next question comes on the line of Sheldon Weeby. Please go ahead.
Hi, Nate. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, no problem.
I was wondering,
that's a great name, by the way. Oh. Sheldon Weeby. I got to steal that.
Oh, can I? Feel free. Just spell it properly. I've read the books, and so as I'm watching the TV series, I'm noticing the changes.
Yes.
And I'm curious, especially in last night's episode where you have the big revelation comes in a way that's totally different than in the books, and I was wondering, how do you approach that kind of expositional change? What are the reasons for it, and how much work does that take?
You know, the Duffer brothers who wrote that episode, they were at my house, and we spent a great deal of time talking about how that's done. You know, the order. I watched it again last night with my family as this aired, and I immediately was thinking about all the story meetings in my house where we were talking about the structure of this episode and episode six, and what is the order of the information and how it's revealed. It is a puzzle that needs to be unraveled just carefully. So thinking of the coins and how you start with this, and then you know, what do you start with? And it was like, we start with the abbeys first, and then we introduce the abbeys first and explain that, and then say, well, that's not possible. And that's what that lunch episode was kind of about. That doesn't make any sense, because how can you evolve? That takes forever to evolve. That's so you're leaving out a huge chunk of information, then you use the coin, and then you use, you know, and then you're using cinematically Matt finding the abbeys in person, finding the sign in person, finding the post-apocalyptic city in the distance, and at the same time that's going on, and then in a minor way, the wife is finding out through the new tenant, Wayne Johnson, about the pods that they were put in, and everything kind of dovetailing together to give you more of the picture, rather than it being kind of a monologue, because we wrote it first with like a monologue and from Pilcher, and I was like, this is just too much information, literary information, and we're going to have to make it visual. So it was a great exercise, and the Duffers, I was really, really proud of their writing. I mean, the Duffers wrote a lot of the episodes, and they just did a great job. They're great filmmakers.
Plus, it also gives you a chance to get to know other people in the town and a little bit more about Ben. So it's kind of a win-win.
It is. You'll see that I was very enamored with the social implications on the young when one indoctrinates them into a belief system. And I'm always interested in these kind of moral choices of, like, would you kill five children to find the cure to cancer? That kind of thing. Those kind of moral dilemmas, and that's what really drew me to this story and what really fuels the remaining five episodes.
Terrific. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes on the line of Jasmine Elise. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
No problem, Jasmine.
So after last night's episode, it seems like Teresa is the only member of the family that has no idea what's going on at Wayward Pines. Can you talk a little bit about how she'll kind of come to find out and when?
Soon she'll find out. I can't tell you how and all of that stuff, but definitely. But that's also a fascinating part of the conversation. It's intimated, it's touched on there in the indoctrination scene of the children. but that will be expanded on over the next episodes of what the difference is between adults in this situation and children in this situation, and which one has a handicap and which one has an asset.
All right, and kind of as a follow-up, sure. Since you touched on the children, it seems like the first generation, the people in the town put a lot of influence and power into the hands of the kids. So how will we see that play out over the course of the season?
Yeah, it's a big deal. You know, the kind of the reason I'm stuttering, I barely ever stutter. The reason I'm stuttering is I'm trying to avoid everything that's popping in my head. Tell you,
okay, no problem.
I'm dancing around every answer. I still want to have this conversation with you.
I want you to have it.
it's a fascinating thing to, you know, they reference, you know, the Ark and Pilcher's intentions to make an Ark, and there's a way, I'm trying not to avoid telling you everything that's going to happen. There's a kind of a thing that we take for granted because there's so many of us right now, that freedom and lack of rules or flexibility of social environment is a given. That's a right. But if there was only X number of us, does one of us get to jeopardize the group? Well, no, that couldn't be allowed, right? Those kind of freedoms couldn't be allowed because there's so few of us. So we're going to have to make really stringent rules. And so this kind of mentality, I'm really dancing around it, but this kind of thinking of how valuable this last group is, and to what extent would you go to make sure that group expands, it pushes all moral things that we take for granted right now because there's 7 billion of us.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I'm dancing around it, but that you can imagine when we're talking about so few of us, how precious those children are.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I'm interested to see how it plays out over the course of the rest of the season.
Yeah. Well, you can assume it's not going to be warm and fuzzy.
No.
Our next question comes from the line of Joshua Maloney with NY Paper. Please go ahead.
Hey, Knight. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
No problem.
So the projects that you work on always have great, really, you know, shocking twists and turns. And I'm wondering, what do you like about that best of storytelling, and why is it important to you?
You know, it's funny. I don't think of it that way. I know that's how it's taken, but I don't see it that way. I don't think of it that way at all. In fact, when I think of it like that, it becomes thin and meaningless. It is all a continuation of character's awareness for me. So as if I have put myself in the shoes of a main character, and that person is learning more about their world, more about their situation, that feels very organic to me. Things aren't right. I'm feeling clouded, obscured. I'm feeling like suffocated. Why? And getting those answers feels very organic. It's a increasing of our main character's knowledge. And are they ready for that? Did they misunderstand something fundamental? Like, when I think of it more from the character's perspective, it feels much more exciting for me. To tell these stories, and because then what my job is as a storyteller is to make you in sync with the main character so that your misunderstanding is the same as theirs, and every piece of information that they have, you have, and you've misunderstood it the exact same way, and then when it comes, it should have been inevitable in retrospect.
All right. Your show has a great cast. It's a cast that has been shrinking in the past couple of episodes. I'm wondering, what was the conversation like with the actors that have been axed? You know, did they buy in immediately, or did they need some convincing?
Well, I'll be honest, there was a couple conversations where they were begging to live a little longer. And I was like, man, I'm sorry, this is Wayward Pine. This shit happens, I'm sorry. It was hilarious conversations that they get, you know, they even pitch me stuff, you know, maybe I'm not really dead, and I got severely hurt, and I can get back up again, and later I'm like, maybe, let me think about it, but it's sweet, actually, the conversations were super sweet in terms of they wanted to be in it, and they just, they were so supportive, all the actors were, it was a great team. Of actors that really loved the idea and loved the premise so much, and they were super supportive of everything, and it's funny, I feel very tied to all of them in almost an equal way, even if they were in three episodes or four episodes or all 10 episodes. They feel very, very attached to the piece. It's strange, even like Juliet, for example, feels so embedded in the whole piece, and she feels from her point of view as well very committed to it. All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Our next question comes to the line of Christina Avina with On Request Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hello again, Knight. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, great. Thank you for being here. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the opening scene from the next episode. Because, you know, the way we left off last night was just such a great way to leave people hanging for about a week. And then, you know, of course, you know, we've seen it weeks ago, but I was kind of like anticipating last night so that everyone else could see it. And now, you know, I've seen the beginning of the next episode, and immediately it just sucks you into this other place, and you're like, what the hell just happened? So, very well shot, by the way. Beautiful. My question is, so now are flashbacks going to be playing a huge role to kind of get the audience up to speed on how we got to where Wayward Pines is today, and how long will the flashbacks kind of be continuing?
Well, that's such a great thing you're bringing up. This is my, I am just an, I'm a crack addict when it comes to flashbacks. It's just my thing. I just find it, so moving when we can go back and see how someone, where they came from or how they got here, how the couple got to a problem and all that stuff. And for me, that was the beauty of finally getting to tell everyone in 5 and 6. I could start to go backwards now and tell you how we got here, you know.
Right.
And the how we got here from all the characters' perspectives is so exciting. So it's it was something that, and you're really tapping into what the structure was that I fell in love with at my house when I had the writers here, and I was like, this is the structure. Let's go back and tell how we got here.
Yeah, I love backstory, and I'm already thoroughly enjoying it. Which brings me to my follow up. When we first spoke, we talked about the casting of Melissa Leo and how brilliant that was, and her character just being so creepy and eerie and hateable. So now we're going into this next episode, and we're seeing her in a very different light when the episode starts. We're starting to see her a little bit more as a person. So my question, I guess, is, with whatever you can reveal, how long is that going to last, or are we really going to go back and still hate her?
You know, there's two answers to that. One is, it's always exciting for me to take an audience's presumptions, especially ones that I've reinforced, and then deconstruct it, you know? So basically take a two-dimensional perspective on a character, and then why did it make it three-dimensional by the end of our story? So there will be a fascinating reevaluation of different things in this piece. The bad guys, who are the bad guys, who are the good guys, will become much blurrier as we go along, which I love. And so that's a critical, a a critical thing. I'm dancing around certain things.
Of course.
I'm trying to think. There was one other thing I wanted to say. I'm blanking on what I was going to say. Shoot. If I remember it, I'll jump back in and say
something. No problem. It's definitely going to be interesting. I can't wait to see how the characters sort of evolve and change my mind on some things.
Yeah. I know what I was going to say. Because it's a very, very blurry moral question. That's where... your decisions on who's a villain and who's not will come into play, you know, and most probably there'll be a division in what people think, like, I would do anything given these circumstances, or you can't live like that, you know, you should rather die out than do these things.
Very well said. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.
Unfortunately, we only have time for one more question.
Our last question comes from the line of Matthew Kelly, popbreak.com.
Hey, Nine, how you doing?
I'm good, Matthew.
Fantastic. So, last question, I think this is a pretty good one to kind of close everything out. We've revealed in the most recent episode the truth, what's going on, and we know that what's going to follow is how are the different characters reacting, and can they handle the truth, can they not? Do you think if you ended up in Wayward Pines tomorrow, memories lost, everything's changed, do you think you could handle it?
You know, I've asked this question. If I had my family there, I think so. But if not, I'm not sure.
Do you think you tried to discover more of the mystery of it, or would you just, nope, this isn't for me. See you guys.
You know what? I think I would try to, you know, I'm not very good with authority, period, so I don't know how that would work out, but we can, I would do very, very Ethan-like things and ask a lot of questions and keep pounding away. At least I think. Maybe in that circumstance I'd be so scared I wouldn't do anything. Who knows?
Very cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matthew.
Did you want to have any other closing comments before Vicky gave any of the replay information?
No, I mean, you know, I guess. I mean, other than that, that we're, you know, we really hope that the excitement about what they've seen will cause everyone to tell their brothers and sisters and cousins, and they can catch up on the 5 episodes and binge watch them. And you know, I when we were editing them, I used to binge watch them to see how they played if I was the one binge watching them, and I loved the arcs of what you see when you watch them together. You'll see more of the things that we talked about either this time or the last time we were all talking together about the architecture of mystery to the reveal of the tentpole of the answer, and then subsequently where we're going to go to in 9 and 10. And so it plays in a long form as well. You know, it plays in these little pieces like the TV format, but because of the way you consume content now, it almost has to exist in a different form and in this kind of watching it in binge form. And so hopefully everyone will enjoy that form as well. But I want to thank everybody for, you know, coming on and talking about it.